Just say that out loud, what you had to do in a recruiting role, co-location. It is like, what a terrible way to start your journey at a company. Come work with us and do 7 things that you don't want to do.
Right.
Not only do you don't want to do, this fundamentally changes the entire trajectory of your life. This impacts how often you see your family and your neighbors. This may rip you out of a community that matters to you.
I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Dan Smolin Podcast. We help people to navigate the future of work, to work that is profound, protects the planet, empowers people and communities, and is fun to do, meaningful work. The stories that our guests tell and the insights that they provide will inspire you to connect with work and experiences that stoke your passions and make the world a better place. For the future of work is meaningful work. This week, we revisit some amazing interviews with workplace futurists who helped the future of work become present. 2020 ushered in numerous changes in where and how we work. No longer were the professional ranks mostly co-located in traditional office settings. Emerging from the pandemic, people in the workforce now may work from home, pay to operate from a co-working venue with a sense of place, or adopt a hybrid model that splits their time between co-located and remote settings. First up, we speak with Ann Driscoll and Chris Schultz, the married co-founders of Launchpad, a co-working community with a first believer's mindset. I spoke with Ann and Chris in March 2021 over Zoom. So Ann, when I was doing my research, a term popped out of the text, and that was first believers. What does that mean, and why is it so important at Launchpad?
You know, I think when we sat down and we developed sort of the core values for the business and for how we operate in the communities that we serve, first believer is the one that always pops up. And Chris Schultz is everyone's first believer.
All right.
So often on the entrepreneurial journey, you hear the words no. Whether that's from an investor, whether it's from your mother, whether it's from that little guilty head of yours that's telling you that it's not going to work. And what you really need are first believers. And so we think of that at every single level within Launchpad. And oftentimes, those folks who are working in the community, they are each other's first believers. So the members who show up every day at Launchpad, they're the ones who hear the sob story when things go wrong, who celebrate the first sale, who ring the bell with you. And you create this environment where we're all sort of on this entrepreneurial journey ourselves, and we're helping each other do it. And we consciously think about it every day about being people's first believers. And we do that in a variety of ways. One, it's the cities that we choose. So we often go to places that maybe would be overlooked by big providers or big operators in our space. Mm-hmm. And we take bets on those cities because we really believe in supporting them and supporting their entrepreneurs. And we also believe that being a first believer is not just about writing a check, it's also being someone's first customer. So we try actively to support our businesses within Launchpad by not only being their mentor, their friend, but to be their customer.
Many years ago, before I even started executive recruiting, I tried my hand at starting a new business based on intellectual property. I spent a lot of money. I wrote a patent. I got a patent issued. And then I tried becoming operational as a startup. And that was so soul crushing. And yes, I got told no every day. I never heard yes. And I was like, how long can I put up with this? So I can see the value in doing that.
You know, it's so true. It's the journey of any entrepreneurial venture, you know, hearing no all day long and in whatever role you are. And it's also the internal journey, right? I think the first believers concept is really the antidote to imposter syndrome, right? Mm. A lot of what holds us back is, am I truly the CEO of this company? Am I truly, you know, hanging up, my big corporate job and stepping out to follow my passion project? And so by being a community of first believers, it's not just us, the founders, that believe in our members, creating a culture where people believe in each other and push each other and support each other along that journey.
I'm wondering if you all could give me a sense of how that gets fleshed out. So I'm a startup entrepreneur. I set up shop at Launchpad. What can I experience at Launchpad that's going to help me flesh out my business model and my path to success?
Oftentimes, the process starts before you become a member. And typically what we see a lot of the journeys, especially for startup founders, is they'll connect with one of us or another member of our community around something as simple as pitch practice or a mentor session, or, hey, I'm looking to raise money. Can I tap into your network to connect with others and get some funding? You know, they always say, if you ask for money, you'll get good advice. And right. Usually when we have that conversation with them, you start to be able to demonstrate the power of the network, the power of the platform, and the power of those connections. And oftentimes, some of the way we recruit startups into Launchpad is through those very first early conversations. Once they join the community, we have an onboarding process for folks where we connect people. It's starting at a co-working space is a little bit like starting your first day of school or your first day at your job. And we approach that very similarly by creating programs and connection points, doing a little member matchmaking so that folks who have like-minded challenges or personalities or different types of businesses, we can connect them. And so we really sort of smooth the path of onboarding into the community. And then we have a variety of different programming and curriculum and supportive activities that happen throughout the year to be able to support entrepreneurs. Obviously, some of them are one-on-one, some of them are group sessions, but we really sort of enable the platform to basically support it. And what we end up seeing is these collisions of connection moments where people come together and they find their technical co-founder amongst our member base, or they find their first customer if they're hanging their shingle to be a consultant. Every time we do surveys of our member base about the benefits of being at Launchpad, we consistently hear that it helped them do more business. It helped them be more professional. It helped them achieve more of their goals.
That's fabulous. So you take a lot of the sting out of being a startup entrepreneur, I would imagine.
We also are startup entrepreneurs, so we understand deeply some of the challenges that we all face. And I mean, I think especially in a year like we've had with the pandemic, with 2020, we have struggled ourselves as many businesses. And I think it's been really valuable for us to be able to share those struggles and to go through that together with our members. We wake up every day thinking about Launchpad and our members. We're not a big corporation. We don't want to be. And I think that really comes through in terms of the connection points that we can make with entrepreneurs in our network.
Few workplace futurists have had an impact as profound as Nellie Hyatt. As head of workplace transformation at VergeSense, Nellie helps companies and people get the most out of their workplaces, wherever they happen to be. I spoke with her in February 2021 over Zoom.
I think in terms of form and function of a place. You've got the form of the office, how it feels, how it looks, and then there's the function of it. Desks, chairs, conference rooms, lunch areas, play areas. How do you think we're going to start reimagining those places that not everybody goes to, but many people do?
Yeah. The first thing for me is we stop calling them activities, but purpose dedicated spaces, because once we envision what is the purpose of each corner of the office, we understand what behavior we want to enhance in this dedicated spaces, and people will know what value they would get out of the special corner or that other corner. The trend that I see right now, and that's the data that we get also from VergeSense, is that the most forward-thinking companies are redesigning their offices with different purposes. Some corners of the office that will be dedicated to innovation. So that will be this education hub innovation where people will feel very connected to their team goals, their individual goals, and also to the company's goals. So they'll understand the contribution, how they can up their skills to enable this large goal to be met. there will be other corners of the office that will be dedicated for socializing. So it's less about play, but how do we create a sense of belonging and community among the employees? And there's other spaces that will be dedicated to teamwork, where again, like we want to enhance this inclusive experience of both remote and in person. And that's what I think the future will be very beautiful, when we go to spaces for a certain value and we know for what purpose we'll be leaving home to get there. And we know what behaviors will be expected of us.
So you came to a lot of your thought leadership watching big companies in Silicon Valley, like Microsoft, transform their workforces to be more distributed. What are some of the things that you learned from what they're doing? And what are some of the things that other blue chip companies, I suppose, should be borrowing from their best practices? What are your thoughts, Nelly?
So during my time in Silicon Valley, where I was a workplace strategist at Stripe, I had to network, or I had the opportunity to network with the larger tech companies in Silicon Valley. And we were sharing notes with peers in corporate real estate and workplace teams. Many of us would say that hybrid is not new, and even remote work is not new. It's just more exposed. But already the trend in Silicon Valley was that people were empowered to decide where is best to do their work, what should be their best schedule, should they come every day, what are the meetings that they want to be in person rather than taking from home. In the sense that it's more exposed now is that in each of these companies, the remote population has increased. So again, we have to be more inclusive in the way we design for them. And we also have to train managers to be better managers for distributed teams, because we didn't give them the tools before to be good managers for distributed teams. And that was impacting the experience for all employees. The third thing that maybe is changing among those companies is that we want to move away from a headquarter based, even from leadership teams. So there was this pressure that you wanted to be close to the leaders, so you would learn from their behaviors, and all those leaders would be based in headquarters. So if you were in a satellite office, your career wouldn't progress as quickly as if you were in a headquarter. We want to move away from that and be better and leverage this location independent mindset to really tap into the talent pool, have leaders located in different places around the world, and grow the talents that are under their wings, rather than just moving everyone else to headquarters.
So what do you think happens to headquarters? I used to think of headquarters as a castle with a moat around it, and you had to get somebody to let you in across the drawbridge. And if you wanted to visit somebody, you had to go through reception. Do headquarters become more inclusive places then?
There's very much this trend of turning this headquarter into a hub where not only your employees would come and meet and connect to your company's mission, but your users, your clients, your partners, your stakeholders. So that's one trend that we see very much in Silicon Valley, turning this hub into a more welcoming place for all the agents that are part of your ecosystems. The second one is that this is very much what we heard at the beginning of COVID. Your offsite become your onsite. So some of your bigger venues, your bigger assets in your real estate portfolio can become this place where you meet once a year, once every 6 months, once a quarter with the entire company, to have this like moment of feeling part of the tribe, seeing the leaders, turning this into a conference. That's something we hear also. And again, for me, that brings more purpose and intention into what we do. It's easy to be lost into your daily task and not feeling the contribution to the overall mission, or not feeling connected to the leaders who are driving that mission. We want to prove that and have all employees really understanding how your contribution impacts the overall mission and why they should fulfill them as they connect with that mission, that we want to be positive on the planet and its resources and the society.
Now we rediscover Dan Rosenzweig, the co-founder of co-working brand Kettlespace. His company benefits workforce professionals who need an inspiring place to work, but also the owners and operators of venues like restaurants and hotels that lost major revenue in the pandemic lockdowns. Kettlespace turns underutilized commercial venues
into vibrant places to gather or to focus on doing heads down work. I spoke with Dan in January 2021 over Zoom.
Yeah, you mentioned the pandemic, and I think it's played out differently based on the kind of circumstances that working people encounter. Some people like me, typically older workers, find comfort in remote or hybrid work. And thousands of dollars in commuting expenses that have been recouped by people like me. And because they're not commuting, they get a lot more done in a day. And then younger workers like millennials, I can imagine if they're stuck in a walk-up one-bedroom apartment in Brooklyn and deprived of human interaction, they want to be around other people. And so for those people who may not get to return to a co-located office setting, I'm wondering if that's the draw for Kettle Space, to provide, you know, that sense of place and, you know, an opportunity for a younger person to have a sense of community. How do you relate to that?
So I love both of those terms you just mentioned, sense of place, which is a super important piece as an individual, especially if you're a millennial and you're growing and you're maturing. Having a sense of place or your where you exist in the world, very, very important for people. And then sense of community also plays into that in a pretty strong way. So as far as sense of place goes, I think you had mentioned, right, like for some folks, they're finding more productivity. And the truth is, from a statistical standpoint, productivity hasn't dipped at all for businesses over the last year. It's stayed pretty much the same, which I think would surprise a lot of business, historically speaking, would surprise a lot of business owners. But in terms of having like a sense of place and a sense of community, I think the opportunity to allow each individual to choose for themselves, like on a daily basis, when I need to do heads down work, I can find a quiet environment where I can just be by myself. And that might mean work from home. And that's okay, right? We're not here to sort of tell everyone that there's a one size all solution. I think that's sort of what it had been before, where the CEO said, this is what works for me, so it must work for everyone. I think the opportunity now is to create what we're calling a hybrid HQ. And the hybrid HQ would be made up, the hybrid's the umbrella term here. And you've got work from home, which is a legitimate part of that. And it might not have to be every day, but it's a portion of the week for those that it makes sense for. Then you've got work near home, which is kind of where our bread and butter has been to date, which is warm, welcoming environments near your home. They can kind of be anywhere between you and where your normal office is, if you have one, but it's a place for you to get heads down working that's not your home environment. You can meet clients there, right? Because, you know, working from home, you might not want to invite people into your home, which I completely understand, you know, in a different context. And then you've got the HQ model, which is people coming into the office. And I think the future is really going to be some sort of hybrid between them. It's not black or white, it's gray. And so each team, each company, each individual within a team, I think this should open up a conversation, right? If I'm a business leader and my goal is to get the most out of every individual on my team, which realistically, I think that should be the goal, then I need to have a conversation with folks and understand where are they finding their flow state. And if it's not in my headquarters at their desk every day, that's okay. I think we can find a happy medium that works both for us as a business and maintains the sanity of each individual so that they're doing their best work on a sustained, enduring timeframe.
So you use the term flow state. What does that mean?
So flow state, I think in different worlds and religions, there's a different definition for it. But the idea is if you can like think back to a time when you were just at your best, right? It could have been when you were giving a presentation in front of people. It could have been when you were doing heads down work for a client, but you were just like in the zone. You were doing something that you loved in a lot of ways. And I think the passion and excitement and joy can sort of lead to that, but it's sort of the universe around you just sort of melts away and you're just in it. And it's not painful, generally speaking. It tends to be a joyful experience. And so our goal, right, if you look at like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, in some ways, that's a little bit of like self-actualization, which tends to be at the top of, of the hierarchy there. But it means you've secured all of these things, right? So you've got shelter and warmth and health and security, and you've got love and kindness, and you've got strong relationships, and you've got a job that you care, like all that stuff sort of starts building onto itself. And then once you've achieved those things, and again, this is aspirational, you'll find this in moments where you're like, it's all coming together. All this hard work has sort of put me into this moment where I'm doing something that I care about and I love. But our goal is to create environments, right? I think the where matters just as much as the why. And so we want to give, like, you know, I know it's tacky, but like, I want to give people the choice to choose their where so that they can achieve and focus on their why.
During last week's episode, we met Marty Constant of Constant Change. Marty is gaining a lot of followers for her keen insight on the future of work. Her thought leadership focuses on one of the most important aspects of future of work, and that is agility. I spoke with Marty in March 2021 over Zoom.
So you bring up the change in the composition of the workforce. It used to be quite binary. You either work for a company or you didn't. And the Bureau of Labor Statistics for over 100 years counted employment based on full-time recognition in a job, 35, 40 hours a week. But that's not the workforce anymore. It's a blended mosaic of full-time workers, gig workers, people that have multiple gigs, maybe people who are semi-retired like me and do all sorts of things. We need to be recognized. Now, if we're in order for that blending and that mosaic to propagate, we have to do something that we haven't quite done yet, and that is figure out a safety net, a new safety net, but also better benefit structures and more benefit portability. Have you thought about any of these things about benefits and what people need to do the work that they want to do?
5 years ago, I was part of a think tank team or a prototyping team at the Institute for the Future in Palo Alto. And it was called Creating Positive Platforms. And the platforms at the time were Uber and Upwork and, you know, a lot of people that didn't necessarily get paid that much, but it was something that they may have done to augment their current work, or some of them were doing it full time. But the questions that came up in all of our prototyping is, how are we going to do this? How are we going to get equal access to education, number one? And then secondly, how do people get enough money or earn enough money to pay for anything? Palo Alto was the perfect place. It was one of the most expensive places to live in the country. I walked around town thinking, where is this barista living? How far does he or she have to travel? And what do the benefits look like? And it was my first, 5 years ago was my first exposure to the concept of universal basic income. I come from the Midwest. We weren't talking about that 5, 6 years ago. We're talking about it now. We don't know what that's going to look like. And I'm not a solution giver for this area. I think that's one of those big problems that we as a society are capable of solving, but I don't have the answer right now. But I do think that it needs to happen. A lot of my friends that were becoming independent consultants were having that issue. You know, a lot of single women friends that were trying to decide, like, how am I going to do this? Do I have to stay corporate or can I start this great business that's going to contribute so much to the world?
You know, you made me think about one of the things that in the future of work is in my dreams, and that is helping people return to the localities, maybe where they grew up. You talk about the Midwest. Here in Northern Virginia, to the southeast of us is the Northern Neck of Virginia. It's this long peninsula that has been emptied of its creative talent. People aren't working on farms anywhere on the Northern Neck the way they used to. And they're going to professional work, maybe in Richmond, or maybe in New York, or maybe in Chicago, where you are. People want to return to wonderful places where they can raise families, have a sense of community. And I think this is a future of work angle. What do you think about that?
Again, our futures were accelerated a year ago, and that started happening as a significant trend. People were already leaving San Francisco before the pandemic. It's just too expensive. The city is beautiful. I worked there for a while. It's just a wonderful place, but it's not realistic for the majority of people to live. So I think that they were leaving by great numbers. I had some family members that left there before the pandemic for that very reason. you know, they go to Colorado, they go to Montana, they're going to a lot of smaller towns. Heck, I even thought about it 6 months ago. I am not going to move to a small town. I really love where I'm living, but I know that a lot of people do that are raising families and see a different life for themselves. And the numbers support everything. I don't know much about the area in Virginia that you're talking about, but all of the articles that I read about it, they cited about 30 or 40 small cities and towns that are doing very well because of it. I mean, I have family that has moved to Tennessee, you know, in mm-hmm. smaller locations and in a city like Nashville, which is smaller than Chicago, but there's the outer regions of Tennessee that are affordable, and there's a lot of artist colonies and creativity that are going on. And we've seen it going on in Texas for years around the Austin area. And but now we're seeing in these smaller towns like Whitefish, Montana.
And finally, we discover the world's first head of remote work, Darren Murph of GitLab. Darren helps people to join the ranks of his company wherever they live or choose to live. He describes the joyful process he engages with team members to help them find a place to live so that work becomes part of a wonderful and successful day, and not just the day. I spoke with Darren in December 2020 over Zoom.
I want to talk about relocation because one of the aspects of being a recruiter is sometimes, at least in the old paradigm, I would have to talk somebody who lived in St. Louis to moving to Kansas City or some other place. And if they were ambitious enough, I could probably do it. But then they would have to, okay, I've got to accept something I don't necessarily want to do. I got to sell a house. I got to move a family. But what you do is so fascinating in that you are relocating people to places that are just the opposite of it. They can go wherever they want to go. They can go to the Amalfi Coast of Italy if they wanted to. Talk about that experience, Darren.
Just say that out loud, what you had to do in a recruiting role, co-location. It is like, what a terrible way to start your journey at a company. Come work with us and do 7 things that you don't want to do.
Right.
Not only do you don't want to do, this fundamentally changes the entire trajectory of your life. This impacts how often you see your family and your neighbors. This may rip you out of a community that matters to you. Come work with us. It'll be awesome. Like,
it might end your marriage. That's the other thing. I can't tell you how many people I placed who ended up getting divorced. That's horrible.
And it's no surprise. Like I would be thrilled if I never have to move again. Moving is a very chaotic and jarring thing. And it's especially jarring when you look at a role and you say, this role could be done remotely. Mm. It absolutely could be done remotely. The tools, the technologies, the culture, the workflows, they all exist. Now, this is different if you're a surgeon and you need to be in an operating room.
Right.
There are certain high-touch industries that without a doubt either need to be done in person or gain massive efficiencies by being done in person. So what I'm talking about here are the digital roles, mm-hmm. the thought-based roles that can be done remotely. But for that sector, it's been incredible that we've done recruiting the way we've done it for so long. Mm-hmm. But it's because most people didn't see any other way. They figured mm-hmm. that remote was a career killer. They were going to be sacrificing praise and promotion if they didn't do it. Finally, COVID-19 is the wake-up call that we can do this differently. Yeah, so at GitLab, a lot of people will join the company located where they were from their prior role. Mm-hmm. And then shortly after onboarding, the gears start turning on, wait, where do I actually want to be? Where would I be happiest? Where would I be most fulfilled? That is an amazing journey to go on. That's the complete opposite of, well, I have to move somewhere. How can I make the most of it? This is, I can move somewhere. How do I optimize it for maximum joy in this one life that I'm given an opportunity to live? It's a fun journey. It's really fun to watch people have those thoughts and conversations. And not everyone moves.
Right.
Some people are relatively happy where they are, or maybe they're waiting for their spouse or significant other to also get a remote role so they can join together and then figure out where they're going to go. And some people plot and plan for years, and just the art and the chase of it is really fun. It's amazing to give people that opportunity. It adds so much to the culture. You really see who people are when you see what they gravitate to. The office facade is stripped away. There is no such thing. And so water cooler talk is much richer and more authentic, because we're talking about, what did you do in a place that matters to you? And the answer to that is very different when you have people in 65 countries.
Links to our guests, full podcast episodes, and social media are provided in the show notes for this episode at dansmolin.com. Please join us again for more inspiring stories from people who are real-time reimagining the work that we do and hope to do. You can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts, or listen to current and past episodes on our website at dansmolin.com. And please take a moment to positively rate and comment wherever you listen to this podcast, because that helps us to connect with new listeners. I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Dan Smolin Podcast. Thank you for joining us on an amazing journey to the future of work doing meaningful work. And do remember this, our best days lie ahead. Let's connect again next week.